The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
American culture is now normalizing the idea that minors can be given hormones to prevent their biological development of their secondary sexual characteristics. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I would look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. Do you remember that exchange? It didn't go well. He never really answered Senator Rand Paul's question. That was Rachel Levine. There's a lot going on in the country right now. I'll touch on some of it. I don't want to dive too deeply into it. It kind of bums me out a little bit in some of this disorientation, what's happening. But coming up in a minute or two, I'll fill you in on what now the federal government is going to allow to happen in terms of funding and surgeries for people who identify as the opposite sex. So we got that and a lot of other great issues to get into. I just want to welcome you back. It's good to be here with you today. And I want to let you know you are welcome to join me anytime. Our toll-free number, if you want to get in on the conversation today, put this in the speed dial and we'll talk about it. Whatever issue it is, it's on the table. It's 888-914-9149. And I want to give you an early wake up. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is in about an hour from now. If you have somebody that's really in need, they have a heavy cross they're carrying, you know, they don't see way out of their situation, please have them join us when our spiritual family gets together and we will pray. So I'll give you a little heads up. Make that phone call, send that email, send that text. Turn others on. Tell others about the great Chaplet of Divine Mercy. God anointed that hour and miracles are happening in that hour. And I want to pray today for a woman who wrote to me the other day who actually is suicidal and doesn't have any hope. And I think life certainly doesn't seem worth living when you have no hope. But you know, yesterday we spoke a little bit about the Canadian truckers, the convoy that is still in Ottawa, and they don't appear to be going anywhere. I'll give you a quick update on that. I'll continue to follow the story for you. We spoke to a trucking company that was part of that, and the Canadian people, of course, pouring out onto the highways, the frigid interstates there, and you know, giving aid and food and even shelter to many of these truckers making their way to their to the capital. They say they're going to, the truckers are going to stay there until the mandates are lifted. And there seem to be some who are trying to disrupt this whole demonstration. One guy showed up with a Confederate flag, but the truckers moved him on. Said, hey, sorry, bud, you're not welcome, right? The Canadian broadcast company, they're the broadcasting company, CBC, they tried to latch on to that guy, but social media showed how he was treated by the truckers. So, you know, it's a mess up there. You're going to hear different reports come in. I try to be objective about what you hear. People are tired. They really are tired of the mandates. As I mentioned to you yesterday, Britain has dropped the mask mandates and the mandatory vaccines and everything else. They want to get back to life. And I think Canadians feel that way. A lot of Australians feel that way. I know many in the U.S. feel that way. And I'll say to you, COVID will be behind us. I don't know whether we'll have another variant or not, but it will get behind us. And I think the summer will be filled with a lot more, I think a lot more sun, lot more smiles and sunshine, if you will. In fact, a little bit later in the program today, we'll talk about vaccine for kids. Pfizer wants emergency use authorization, and they want to vaccinate kids under five, infants. I don't know. It just gives me pause. I'm not a physician, but it gives me pause. I'll fill you in on what they're doing too, coming up a little later, and we'll answer a lot of the questions you may have regarding COVID as we'll give you the latest update. A couple weird stories out there. I don't know if you're familiar with what's happening with a professor at Georgetown University. He was a newly appointed law professor there, and you know, very first month there, started his job, started teaching, and he decided to criticize President Biden for his decision to choose a black woman as a nominee to replace, you know, Justice Breyer at the Supreme Court. And he tweeted out that an Indian American judge on the First Circuit Court of Appeals, and he says, I'm going to quote him, and he says, quote, is a solid progressive and very smart, even has identity politics benefit of being first Asian Indian American. But that doesn't fit into the latest intersectionality hierarchy, so we get a lesser black woman, end of quote. Now, that's, again, Professor Shapiro saying this, not me. Of course, I think it can go over well with the students at the law school and the school's administration. And Shapiro admitted, he said, look, sorry, it was poorly worded, and I apologize. But that's not good enough for the woke culture, right? So he's now on administrative leave. And you might have seen what happened with, Whoopi Goldberg, right? I said to my wife, you got to give her a little bit of a break. I'm not a fan of Whoopi Goldberg or her politics or really her liberal views on a lot of different issues. She opened her mouth and said something she should never have said, about, the concentration about the Nazis, that the extermination of the Jews not being about race. And then she came out later and apologized. I think she was on a late night talk show and basically made the case that, the way she looks at race, it's a little bit different. Now, she was wrong, clearly. But again, as much as I don't care for her or her politics, I do think she misspoke. And I'm not quite sure whether or not she deserves to have to lose her job over that. Should she lose her job because of a misstatement, or is what she said so egregious that, yeah, absolutely, she should be gone? I mean, we can talk about it. She's in hot water. The View, of course, a bunch of different women sitting around talking about news issues, whatever's in the culture. And when Whoopi said that the Holocaust wasn't about race, she says it involved two groups of white people. Of course, she's going to get reaction, right? Did not go over well at all. So she tried to explain to Stephen Colbert later that night what it meant, what she meant, with white and black. You can readily see the differences in skin color, she says, but you can't do that with Jews or other people who are white, right? But she did, she was made fully aware that Hitler was subtly against the Jews as a race, and that he and his fellow Nazis, unfortunately, tried to exterminate these people, made caricatures of them based on their physical characteristics, and stereotypes that have been made throughout the centuries. And, she was totally wrong. Should she lose her job? Many people are saying yes. I think that she didn't. I really think that she was, I don't know, I really think that she misspoke. I know it's hard to say in a situation like that, but we are in this cancel culture where everybody used to make one mistake and you get fired over it. I know some mistakes are serious and demand that, but still, I don't know. I'm on the fence of the whole thing. As I said, not a fan of Whoopi Goldberg, but, if she made a mistake, and she admits it and it learns from it, shouldn't she be given a break? Maggie was saying to me during the break, she says, I'm so tired of always hearing about race and not people's virtues and thoughts or character. Maggie, I agree. You can open your mic. I mean, that's a great point you brought up a little bit earlier. I feel the same way when I heard the president decide that he wants to choose a Supreme Court justice, not on their merit or their credit or their academic achievements or their brilliance, but rather on the pigmentation of their skin. I think it's terrible. What you make of Whoopi Goldberg's comments, Maggie?
To be honest, I don't really pay attention to Whoopi that much. I used to love her as an actress, but I really have a hard time watching The View. It kind of just seems like regurgitated noise to me, to be honest.
Yeah, well, no, I agree. I don't watch it at all either, but I know when she came out later making that comment and said, hey, I thought race, really, I think about it as color, Clearly, she's wrong on so many different right. levels, but should she lose her job because she made one
no.
mistake?
Yeah, no.
That's how I feel. I feel, okay. I really think she didn't know. She opened her mouth and made a mistake.
Everybody makes mistakes, and we're so quick to jump on people's backs these days. And I mean, especially when you're in the entertainment industry, she's flapping her gums most of the time. So it just is part of the territory. And I think we have to be a little more gracious and realize that people don't know sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and who knows, maybe she did know and she's doing a reverse. I don't know.
Maybe.
Bottom line, I don't think so. One final story I thought I'd share with you. You know, we started, Maggie, you played that audio at the very head end of the show with Senator Rand Paul and Rachel Levine. When I was away from the mic, I know Ed Marcy, who guest hosted with me, did an interview with a man named Doug Wilson from the Catholic Benefits Association about the Biden administration's effort to make it mandatory for all hospitals, if they get federal funding, including Medicare and Medicaid, that they have to consider any request of transgender procedures as medically necessary. And the key word is necessary, medically necessary. But again, I want to keep this in the forefront just because of, look, if this rule goes through, it's going to mean that Catholic hospitals, and I just want to show you, I talk about religious freedom in this country, and I talk about the erosion of it, and I talk to you a little bit about how, you know, we're going to see, you know, more arrows flying, more chinks in our armor as Catholics, as people of faith. If this goes through, Catholic hospitals are going to be required to do these procedures, right? And as a physician, you may not want to do them, right? It's criminal. I mean, why should a Catholic hospital have to do something like this? Abortions are also going to be required. I mean, I'll be very clear about that. You know, we're going to see the fight come down to the state level. You're going to see these, you're going to see also right now with a law being passed like this, where doctors are going to have to perform these things. I know a lot won't, but others will. This is something that I think can be defeated in court, but I'm just letting you know what's being presented. The transgender mandate, I should say, is going to be harder to argue, and it's going to be, I think, more politically fraught. I mean, the proposed rule states this, and I'll just share it with you just to put it on your radar. It says nearly half of the transgender respondents in one survey said that their health insurance company denied them gender-affirming surgery. And in a similar proportion reported that they were denied coverage from hormone therapy. So what happens? The rule is going to make it incredibly easy for anyone, even children, right, who are under their parents' authority. And here's where it really gets me. If a 13-year-old comes in, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, and they want to have some sort of surgery that will mutate them, you know, mutilate them for life, they're going to be able to get that. That's how bad this proposed law is. I mean, we really are in a time where I think minds have become darkened. That's for sure. Let me go to Patty in New Mexico. We'll take a call or two, 888-914-9149. Hi, Patty. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I would like to comment on the fact that I remember when Sharon Osbourne didn't condone or condemn, but made a comment regarding her friend in England's comment.
Yeah, Pierce, what's his name? Yeah, go ahead.
I beg your pardon?
Go ahead, Patty. What was his name? Pierce something, right? I'm zoning out on what his last name was, but... Oh, we just lost you. Give us a call back. Pierce Morgan. Thank you, Patrick. Pierce Morgan was his name. Yeah, I remember that story. I think we lost her cell signal, so feel free to give us a ring back. She says, remember when Sharon Osbourne, you know, she came under incredible attack over supporting her British friend. As a result of it, I mean, there's no tolerance. I think she was on The View at the time. I think she left The View as a result of that. And, I think, well, it's the beauty of what we do here, right? We can at least exchange thoughts and ideas here on Relevant Radio. And we can discuss these types of issues openly and honestly without fear of losing your job. I think if you are sitting on a very liberal set or maybe on a conservative set, I don't know. If you espouse things that are diametrically opposed to that ideology, there's zero tolerance. We live in a culture where there is no tolerance. And yet that is the mantra that's being promoted constantly, isn't it? No, we all have to be tolerant. We all have to accept each other. If a 13-year-old wants to be a transgender and have surgery, you have to accept that. If this person wants to, you know, abort their child, you have to accept that. You know, whatever the ideology of the day is, whatever the movement is, you've got to accept it or you're intolerant. And yet there is zero tolerance for people who come out, have an opposing view, and sometimes, well, hopefully, are speaking truth, you know? So we really don't live in a culture of tolerance. It's tolerance if you go along with their mindset. You're intolerant if you speak something that opposes that thought, and quite often that intolerance is something that's based in the, you know, Judeo-Christian, you know, ethic. So let me go to Novella listening in let me see what else. In Staten Island, I'm trying to read it. Novella, Staten good Island? Afternoon. Yeah, hi, Novella.
Hi,
good afternoon.
I'm calling from Staten Island, New York. I'm calling about the comment that was made by Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
To be Jewish, that is a religion. That is absolutely not a race. And I'm surprised that she didn't say that and that no one else has says that. There are Jews of every nation, practically in the world. So...
Yeah, you have Russian, you know, Jews. You've got Polish Jews. You've got Jews from all
over. You've got Arab Jews. Sure. You've got Ethiopian Jews. And that is a religion. It has never been a race.
Well, maybe
never
somebody
been a race.
Maybe somebody can explain it. In some respects, I mean, I think the Jewish people identify as a people and as a race. And again, maybe somebody can join me and explain this in greater detail on this, because you know. The Jewish people stems from Israel, right? The people of God, they spread out across the planet. So they do identify. Because my wife and I had this conversation this morning, actually, with somebody. And they made that very same comment. It's like, you know, how can you say, you know, you're the Polish or you're Italian or you're Irish or you're whatever? I think in the case of Jews, you know, the Jewish people look at themselves as a race. So I mean, that's why there's so much outrage. And Hitler clearly viewed them as a race and was out to exterminate them as well as their religion. You know, in the concentration camps, it wasn't just Jews. I mean, there were a lot of political leaders and thinkers of the day, a lot of professors, a lot of Catholics, a lot of Christians. He rounded up homosexuals. He rounded up a lot of people and put them in those extermination camps. So, all right, let me take a short pause. It's about 19 minutes after the hour. When we come back, we'll talk more. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Connecting you to the true, good, and beautiful.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Good to be here. Thank you so much for joining me. And what's happened? I said a little bit earlier that our founding fathers are probably turning over on their grave. Our rights, they come from God, right? They don't come from government. You know, everyone here, I think you know that. I mean, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. You share my same passion. I think what happens is we don't know our history. You know, we've talked about the 1619 Project in the country. When was the founding of our country, right? It was 1776. What was that Revolutionary War over? And who were some of these founding fathers? You know, there's some untold history that I think should be told. There's a new book out. It's called Liberty's Lions. And if you love American history, if you love your Catholic faith, I think this is a must for you to read. The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America is written by a guy named Dan Leroy. I had the book. I just started reading it. I haven't gotten all the way through it yet. Easy read, but it is fascinating. And, you know, he gets right to the point in his book. The primary goal of what he was doing in this book was to gather together in one place the significant contribution of Catholics to the American Revolution. And you might not know some of this stuff. I mean, the two Catholic carols, you know, one of the first bishops, the other was a sign of Declaration of Independence. You know, he addresses what Ben Franklin and John Adams and George Washington and other founders thought about Catholicism. What was it like to be in an early America like that? What role did American Catholics, you know, play in our founding and the first slave revolt? What kind of suffering did they go through? It's a excellent, excellent read, and I'll tell you how you can get it. He's going to be joining me in a second. Of course, you're more than welcome to join me, too, if you ever want to get in on the conversation. You know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. But you know, I love history. I think we can learn a lot from our past. I think we can avoid a lot of problems by knowing our past. And I think it's got to be told honestly. And when you read histories of this great nation of ours, especially when you know what you read growing up in schools, you know, the authors of those books, they taught a particular worldview.
And, of course, that worldview was Protestant in nature. You know, you hear about the Puritans seeking refuge, right, from the persecution in Britain. We heard about the, I don't know, the later exploits of men like George Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and Adams and some of the other founding fathers. But you know what you didn't hear? And I love this, and I want to do this one day. I want to travel to so many of these places. The very first Mass ever celebrated in our country, first Mass celebrated in U.S. soil, it took place in St. Augustine in Florida. It wasn't 1776. It wasn't, you know, in 1692. It was 1565. Although, and I've talked about this in the past, there are possibilities that other Masses could have been celebrated in our shores earlier than that. But we also, you probably didn't learn about the things like the Quebec Act, right? Which was considered the last straw by the colonists against their English overlords, or even more than the Stamp Act or the tax on tea. I mean, you know certain parts of history, but do you know some of this forgotten or untold history? The Quebec Act actually allowed the Catholics in the province of Canada to live their faith unhindered, unlike Catholics in the 13 colonies. It's a very different world here. And again, we were under the constraint of Protestant governors. You know, being a Catholic in the New World was a tough thing to do. And more than likely, you might have only heard. I think a lot of people might know that John Carroll was the first Archbishop of the United States, Charles Carroll, the only Catholic signer on the Declaration of Independence. Of course, the first senator of the state of Maryland, right? Maryland. So I always found that to be kind of cool. But both played very strong roles in our independence, in that whole independence movement of the country and the revolution itself. And that history is overlooked. But it's so essential to the development of the Declaration of Independence into the Constitution, especially the First Amendment, which we talk about a lot on this program, right? So joining me today is the man who wrote this book, Liberty's Lions. Dan Leroy joins me. He's documented a lot of this in his new book. It's available at Sophia Press. And the subtitle of the book, Liberty Lions, is The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. I'm actually enjoying the book. Like I said, I haven't gotten all the way through it. Easy read. And if you like your history, I think you're going to like that. He's an author. He's a journalist. He's a teacher. And it's great to have him here with me today. Good to have you, Dan. Good afternoon.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a great pleasure. I just want to say I visited the site that you were talking about, St. Augustine, the site of the first Mass. That's something everybody ought to see for themselves. I was lucky enough to see it. And that is a great, great piece of history.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's so many great places in this country that are the stamp of our Catholic faith on them. One of the things you did too, and I'm just curious, before we even talk about your book, your work has appeared in, I couldn't think of a more diverse array of publications. You got the New York Times, the Rolling Stones, the Village Voice, Newsweek, the Alternative Press, National Review. And when I look at the Village Voice and National Review, they're pretty opposite. They're pretty polarized. I have to ask you about your writing. I mean, that's pretty diverse. All those platforms pick up. Why is that?
I don't know if you could thread that needle as easily today as I did when I started this 10 or 15 years ago. I'm a music guy first and foremost, and that's cool. The reason that you find some of that writing in some of the publications. You know, my favorite publication of all is the late and not always lamented Gene Simmons' Tongue magazine.
Wow.
It didn't have a long run, but I was in there.
That's something else.
We did some stuff, yeah. So, to take it maybe a step further than that, you know, we hear all the time that we have to figure out ways to try to either engage with the culture or cut ourselves loose from the culture. And I think we're rapidly reaching a point where it might have to be the latter. But I do think that there's something to be said for having some knowledge of the culture and being able to speak to it without maybe being corrupted by it.
Brother, I'm with you 100%. And you know what? I think we are of this world, but not of the world. You know what I mean? We have to live in this world, but we're destined for a different place. And how do you transform it? We can't necessarily hide our heads in the sand. We have to, infiltrate and be witnesses for our faith and for Christ. And the early church did that, and they brought tremendous, you know, conversion. And good always conquers evil. The country's in kind of a time of disorientation right now. There's no question in my mind about that. I was talking to Dr. Donahue about the battle of ideologies that we're seeing today. But that's why you and I have a duty. You know, you do it with your pen in a powerful way. I have a microphone. All of us can do it in our families and in our communities. And that's what this is all about. And I love your work. And I got to say, I'm glad because I love American history. And, of course, I'm a devout Catholic. I love my faith very much. What motivated you to take a look at the founding? I know you start the book talking about the Stono River slave rebellion back in 1739. I don't think many people even know about that. Most people think it was just an uprising of slaves who were, you know, fed up with the horrific conditions. But you seem to think that there was something more to it than that, including something Catholic.
There appears to be. And there's a lot that we don't know about that particular event. But one of the things that has been fairly well discerned is that at least some of the slaves who participated in that revolt were Congolese. They were Catholic. There were at least a couple of them who appeared to be pretty well educated. And there appears to have been some kind of element of Marian devotion that was a part of this riot. Yeah. Now, we don't know that for sure because we don't have written records of any of this, but the research that's been done does suggest that this didn't come out of nowhere, that it was motivated at least in part by the faith of these Congolese Catholic slaves, and that perhaps what they were doing was trying to atone for some conditions that they found to go against what they knew as Catholics.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's a little bit of history I don't think a lot of people know. Not many people have heard about the Quebec Act either. I was talking about that before you came on. Explain that. Give us a little history lesson, if you would. What was it? What role did it play in actually fueling the coming revolution?
Well, it was really, first and foremost, a very cynical, but also kind of brilliant ploy by the British. The British wanted to keep the French Canadians out of the revolution. And one way to do that was to extend to Catholics, who made up the majority of the population, the right to practice their religion as they saw fit. This was interpreted by a lot of the colonists, the Protestant colonists, as a provocation. In fact, we have a lot of the founders on record, folks like Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, who indulged in, you know, very open anti-Catholic sentiments as a result of the passage of the Quebec Act. It was a good decision by Britain, although clearly, as I say, it was cynical, because conditions for Catholics back in Britain were just about as bad as they were in the colonies. But they were trying to keep Canada out of it, keep them at least neutral and hopefully aligned with Great Britain. And it kind of worked and it kind of didn't work. That led to a pretty famous mission to Canada, which involved a couple of the guys that you mentioned earlier, Charles Carroll of Carrollton and John Carroll, who would become later the first Catholic bishop of the United States and later the first archbishop. And had he not gone on that mission to Canada and become friends with Benjamin Franklin, we don't know whether he would have ended up as bishop and archbishop, because Benjamin Franklin played a huge role in helping elevate him to those positions.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment, because I was, you know, we know that our founding fathers were deists. We live in a Protestant culture, and you got these Catholics. I'm assuming they're outnumbered, outgunned, so to speak. And I'm curious as to Franklin and to John Adams and to Washington and some of the other founders, what they thought of Catholicism. I mean, again, you go back and we have the Protestant Revolution. There's this great divide in Europe. How did they view Catholics in the New World, especially the Founding Fathers who put together these beautiful documents that we have?
I think most of the founders, if you put it on a continuum, most of them would tend toward the side that was either anti-Catholic or certainly had very little sympathy for Catholicism. Yeah. There are two guys among that group who really kind of stand out. One of them is Franklin. Franklin stands out because he was smart enough to kind of keep his positions, whatever they may have been, kind of under wraps. And John Adams at one point said, and he was kind of jealous about this, he said, you know, the Catholics think that Franklin's a Catholic and the Quakers think he's a Quaker. Franklin was one of those guys who could kind of be all things to all people. But the guy who did it best, and I don't think it ought to be a surprise to anyone, is George Washington. Yeah. George Washington gets a chapter in Liberty's Lions, and partly because he wasn't just a guy who was tolerant of Catholics, he was a guy who kind of walked the walk as well as talked the talk. Good example of that is when he took over the Continental Army in 1775, there were a series of celebrations that had gone on for a number of years called Pope's Nights all throughout New England. Sounds like it might be a fun Catholic event, but it really wasn't. It was a very anti-Catholic event motivated by memories of the gunpowder plot. It was really an excuse to get out, get drunk, burn the Pope in effigy. And when Washington becomes commander-in-chief, he says immediately, like, we're going to stop this.
Wow.
He put the kibosh on it and said, look, this is completely counterproductive. If we expect these people, Catholics, to contribute to this revolutionary cause, then we can't be doing things like this and antagonizing them publicly and discriminating against them. And he put a stop to it. And that's only one example, yeah, but it's an example that kind of demonstrates why Catholics at the time and since have viewed Washington so favorably. I think Washington figured out if you want to be the father of your country, you got to be the father of everybody. And that's something that a lot of the other founders, they were not able to make that determination.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, Washington, of course, our first president, was a Masonic theist. But, you know, there's some historical evidence. I had an author on, her name was Jan Connell. She wrote a book called The Spiritual Journey of Washington. I don't know how much credit to put into the book or not. It showed that he had some faith, Christian faith, but he may have even had a vision of the Blessed Mother, of a woman in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. What do you know about that?
What's actually mentioned, funny that you bring that up, because it is mentioned in this chapter about Washington and Liberty's Lions. The vision has kind of persisted.
Dan, I'll tell you what. I hate to do this to you, Dan. Hold the thought.
Oh, no.
Okay, just hold the thought. Let me take a quick break. I want to give you room. I don't want to cut you off. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk about this. Did George Washington have a vision of a beautiful woman in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania? We'll look at that and a lot more. Stay with me.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Here at the Drew Mariani Show, we don't wave a political flag. We wave the Catholic flag.
Yeah, that's right.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
That's right. Giving you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. We're speaking with the author, Liberty's Lions, the Catholic revolutionaries who established America. And if you were just tuning in, we're taking a look at our founding, many of the pivotal figures in our nation's history. One of them, of course, George Washington. Everybody knows the stories about him. Did George Washington really chop down a cherry tree? You know, did he have a vision of the Blessed Mother? There is an author. Her name's Jan Connell. She wrote a book. I've had her on my program a number of times, and she would tell this story. In fact, Dan Leroy, he actually writes about it in his book, too. And before he tells the story, before he fills you in on what ultimately happened there, I just in terms of God's providence, I think God has a great mission, a great role for the United States of America. And I've said this before, and I'll probably say it a million times in the future. The role that our nation plays is not just to lead the world economically or militarily. We're one of the most generous nations in the world. I think we're also meant to lead the world spiritually. I think there needs to be a great conversion, a great revolution in this country towards God. You know, George Washington, of all of our great leaders, was certainly blessed by God's providence. By all accounts, I remember reading he should have been killed in the French and Indian War back in 1754, 1763, whatever the time that was. He was miraculously saved. You know, there were all sorts of events which showed the hand of providence on Washington. So is it possible? Is it possible that the founding father of our country experienced an apparition of what is described, not as the Blessed Mother, but it's described as an angelic female. A lot of people interpret it as the Mother of God during a very harsh trial in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. Now, whether the vision is authentic or not, a lot of controversy over that, but it is a tantalizing tale. And Dan Leroy is here to share that with you. I know you write about this in your book as well. You have to fill people in because I'm sure this is new and a surprise to many who are listening.
Yeah, it's a story that has kind of circulated for a number of years. It's generally known as Washington's Vision. And it's as you described, it relates this tale that Washington, kind of in the depths of winter at Valley Forge, is visited by this angelic-looking apparition of this woman who kind of shows him a series of scenes that grow increasingly apocalyptic. And at the end of this series of visions, she kind of points the way to the fact that America is going to emerge from all this. It's going to emerge whole, and that Washington's going to play an important role in leading it. Now, all the evidence that I've been able to find and that other people have been able to find suggests that this is probably a story along the lines of, as you mentioned, chopping down the cherry tree, throwing a silver dollar across the Potomac. It appears to have started life after the Civil War, toward the end of the, let's say the middle of the 19th century. And a lot of people believe that it was created by this guy, an author who was trying to drum up support for keeping the Union whole. And that makes a lot of sense. But there is one thing about it that I think a Catholic would hear and say, I have to wonder. There are certainly some similarities to what happened at Fatima. When you look at the story about Washington's vision, and even if the story originated as late as people claim, well, Fatima doesn't happen until after this. So that's one of the things when you call it tantalizing, I think a Catholic reader would look at that and say, I wonder.
Yeah. I love it. I'm so glad that you wrote this book. We have a few minutes left here. Because this is a big book. I just finished a book. They limited me to about 140 pages, but boy, I wish I could have had 400. I've got your book in my hand. It's almost, 400 pages? Maybe it is 400 pages here. It's a wonderful work. Two things here. One, what motivated you to address this particular topic? And then secondly, the role of Catholics in our founding. I'm all about truth, whether George Washington had an apparition or not. I want the truth, right? Whether or not it's a tale or it's a reality. I want the truth about our founding as well. Why have the roles of Catholics been ignored? And maybe that's one of the reasons you wrote this book, but I'd love to have answers to both of those questions.
Well, it is, and they're kind of intertwined, I guess. The reason I think that Catholics have been underrated as far as their contributions to the Revolution, it's a numbers game. And the numbers will tell you that there were probably between 24,000 to 30,000 Catholics in the colonies during this time. So that's less than 2% of the population. And not all of those Catholics were patriots. Right. So it's pretty easy on that basis to say, well, Catholics couldn't have had much of an impact. But the raw numbers don't always tell you everything. The founders knew that themselves. And the numbers don't show that Catholics were, they weren't just patriots, they were leaders of this cause. They were leaders militarily, economically, intellectually, and of course, spiritually. And then the numbers cut two ways, too, because it's true that only a small percentage of colonists were Catholics, but then you factor in the foreign soldiers, who, let's face it, were pretty much the deciding factor toward the end of the struggle for independence. And then the numbers give you a little bit of a different story. You think about the contributions of Catholic troops from France, from Spain, from Germany, from Poland, you start to see how a number that is mentioned in the book, which is that as many as 70% of the soldiers who fought on the side of independence might have been Catholic. Okay, that's a little bit of a different picture than the one that we're used to. And the contributions of foreign countries to American independence, they've been underrated almost since the Revolution itself. But when you include those people and you remember that lots and lots of them were Catholics, it puts the Catholic case for their significance in the role of American independence, it puts it in a somewhat different light, I think. So, and then the other part of that is having all this stuff between two covers, as opposed to being in this book or that history. You put them all together, I hope it gives the argument a little bit more weight and mass.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And if people want to get the book, best way to get it, I'm assuming, is online at any major bookstore. Yep. But also, do you have a website where you can get the book?
I do. And you can get it from directly from the publisher, sophiapress.com. And you mentioned all the other usual suspects, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Right. And my website is danleroy.com. And if you'd like a signed copy, I will sign one up and ship it out you, and you can get it right there through my website.
All right, so Sophia Institute Press, you can get the book. SophiaInstitute.com is their website. They're the publishers. Always good to support them. Of course, if you want a signed copy, who doesn't want a signed copy from the author, right? You can go to danleroy.com. Dan, thanks. Thanks for being here. Always good to talk about our faith and about our country. I love them both. I think patriotism and our faith are really inseparable. So keep up your good work.
Drew, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. That's Dan Leroy. Check him out. Check out the book. Here's the title. Okay, it's called Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. And I do. I think it's a great read. As I said, I've only just begun the book, to read it. But it'll give you a look at our founding in a way that you may have never looked at it before. You may never have looked at it before. You know, just one final note. I only have a moment here left in the broadcast. God's providence. I really do believe the hand of providence has been on this nation. As I mentioned, you know, Washington, by all accounts, should have been killed in the French Indian War. You know, there was a battle in which Washington and British Army members were ambushed by the French, and every officer on horseback was killed. Every single one of them, except for Washington. He wrote to his brother John later. This was July of 1755, and he says, but by the all-powerful dispensations of Providence, I've been protected beyond all human probability or expectation. He says, for I had four bullets through my coat and two horses shot under me, yet I escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me. See, when God has a mission for you, there's nothing that's going to stop you from that mission. There comes divine protection. There comes divine providence. And I think Washington was just that. Washington was only 23 when he faced that ordeal of death on the battlefield. He emerged unscathed, his faith deeper and stronger than ever. I believe God protected him. And I also believe, I really do, I believe that God has a great mission for our country. And when you look at our founding, you look at the fingerprints of God all over this nation. Have we lost our way? Yes. We have lost our way on a lot of different fronts. But I think there's a lot of good people in this nation. I think there's a lot of faithful people. There's a lot of virtue still in this country. That's me personally. Maybe I'm an eternal optimist. If you watch too much news, you'll really be disenchanted. But I think America is the greatest nation in the planet. It's one of the greatest nations in all of civilization. What we've been able to achieve, what we represent, the freedoms that we champion here, the liberties. This is an anointed country, and I know God has his hand on it, but we're strayed from him, and there's consequences when we stray. But you think about our founding. You know, it was not that long ago. We're very young, you know, on the timeline of nations. And mighty empires rise and mighty empires fall, and I'm not going to say that America will last forever,
But our demise comes a lot quicker when we stray from God. And that's the bottom line there. But you also have to think about what happened. You know, was there an apparition of the Mother of God to George Washington? I don't know. People debate that. There are some I've spoken to who absolutely think it was legitimate and authentic. We know in this country, there were mystics and saints who would bilocate from as far as Spain, and they'd be in their cells praying, and they would appear to Native Americans, teaching them faith before the missionaries ever got here. Of course, we have the most famous apparition in our country of all, the apparitions of Our Lady of Good Help, right? She came as the Queen of Peace, right? She came warning of a chastisement that was going to befall the country. And to her very words, 12 years later to the date, that took place. But she also gave a great mission, you know, to Adele, who was a recipient of her visions, and to all of us. You know, we are to teach the faith. And that's what Relevant Radio does here every day. And I want to invite you to learn more about Our Lady. And one of the ways we can do that is by just signing up for Miracles, Mysteries in Mary. It's a campaign that Relevant Radio decided to do in 2022. In 2020, it was a year dedicated to St. Joseph, right? So we really focused heavily on that. I love Our Lady. Now, I'll tell you what, she has brought me new levels of spirituality. She's brought me into the arms of her son. She sped me down that pathway towards her son. And she'll do the same thing for you because she never points to herself. And over the course of the year, if you sign up, you'll get exclusive content and you'll get plugged into, Marian history. You know, we're going to be exploring Our Lady's intercession in human history. And she is there from the time the angel Gabriel appears to her to this very day. She is appearing in every habitable continent with an urgent message today to the world to return to God, to amend our lives, right? To put our trust in her son, that to begin to live, you know, your heaven on earth is part of her message. So over the course of the year, and there are so many pivotal moments where the church, and there's so many great Marian feast days that we'll honor our Lady. If you want to grow in your knowledge of our Blessed Mother, know how to explain and even defend her, because I know a lot of people think, I don't know how to defend, you know, why we pray the rosary or, you know, Our Lady, why not just go right to Jesus? If you want to learn more, throughout the year, we're going to have lessons on Our Lady. We're going to help you grow in your faith. We're going to help you to grow in your knowledge, your Marian knowledge. We're going to bring to you cutting edge guests, and it's all free. So I just want to put it on your radar, okay? It's relevantradio.com/Mary. It's relevantradio.com/Mary. And I think it'll transform your spirituality. And Lent's about to begin in the not-too-distant future here, right? We'll be here before you know it. What a great Lenten exercise. We always look at things we can deny ourselves, and I think that's good. I mean, fasting and denial and sacrifice and reparation, they're very important. They amplify your prayer. But I think one of the things we can also do is enrich our mind, our intellect, deepen our love and our heart. And we can do that through Our Lady. So I would encourage you to go ahead and to learn a little bit more about her. You know, I was in a meeting earlier today with a network, and they brought up some great questions like, you know, why is Our Lady's house in Italy? Did she live there? Well, you'll get the answer to that question when you sign up. A lot of really intriguing questions and a lot of great answers too. So you'll get plugged into everything from feast days to stories of the saints and reflections and a whole lot more. All right. So there, I'll leave it at that for you. We're about to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So if you want to join me, the toll-free number here for you is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And of course I always take, the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 calls. One final thing just on Our Lady. And I was thinking about the role of this, because a lot of people don't really reflect on the time in which we live. Our Lord told St. Faustina that this is the time of God's mercy. So he told her, he says, I've chosen you to be the secretary of my mercy, to prepare the world for my return. Now, I don't know when the return of Christ is. Christ might come for me today. He might come 10 years, 20 years, you might come in 2,000 years. But that's what he told St. Faustina. So we could take it on a literal sense. Maybe we can zoom out and take it on a broader sense. But historically, When visions come, when Our Lady has appeared across the centuries, when our Lord has appeared, they're oftentimes prior to war or plague. We're experiencing that now. Famine, disaster. There were a flurry of apparitions before the bubonic plague, before the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, the Great World Wars, right? The Rwandan genocide. Our Lady came there warning, you know, a decade before, coming day after day. So these visions often deliver a prophetic element, and you need to discern them because, you know, the fullness of our faith is contained in what's already been revealed, right? But these private revelations, I do think they help you grow in holiness. They help you realize that God does exist, that there's more to the temporal, you know, that there is something beyond what you can see, feel, and touch, that God does exist, that He is real, that He's an intimate part of your life, and that He loves you. Let's turn to His love when I return.